Happy Thanksgiving, Under Rocks crew.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Spencer, Sue, Austin. Yep.
Oh, Austin just walked in, and he brought a special treat.
Ready to gobble here.
Yeah.
We've got quite the Thanksgiving spread
here. What are we looking at here? Well, of course, beer nuggets.
You whip those up, and they are beautiful. Between classes, too.
I whipped those up right after my last class.
Wow.
I drove and picked it up. These are Pizza Pro beer nuggets.
Okay. Ding.
We got a bunch of local treats here, too. Sue, what do you have?
I have my take on the Beefaroo out of Rockford, pumpkin squares.
They do look like that.
They always have like a piece of candy corn on them. So it's like a little pumpkin cake with cream cheese frosting. We'll see.
A single candy corn is somehow necessary and also the appropriate amount of candy corn is consuming.
And the most concerning item on our banquet table is, listeners, it's a you'll need to go to the website and look at the picture, but it is it's a scientifically... Is it a Pyrex?
It's a large measuring cup. I get points off for presentation, but you don't want to serve pink things in like bundt molds either.
Uh-huh. Okay, tell us what this is, Austin.
So this is circus peanut salad, as we first witnessed from Illinois Country Living magazine. Yes, I'm still trying to make it happen. Most people are disgusted by the concept and the presentation of it, but it's better than you think it's going to be.
It sounds awesome to me.
Okay, are you a fan of the circus peanut?
I eat them if they're available.
Okay,
I don't go out of my way for
circus
peanut.
Whoa,
I heard when the Berlin Wall fell that the East Berliners went charging into West Berlin looking for circus peanuts. True or not, I can't say, but that's what I heard. How old was the issue that
when it was found here at the station? But probably like in the
90s.
Well, who knows how long it was sitting around for, or who first introduced it. I suppose, I don't know when circus peanuts date to. I feel like I should have known this by now.
Ask your grandpa, kids. Yeah. Your great-grandpa.
You also have a bag of them that literally these date from. Give them a squeeze. They are hard as rocks.
They're past the freshness guarantee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, they got a little give to them yet.
Okay. But I guess maybe harder ones are easier to work with when you're turning them into salad.
The problem is I bought the big bag, and it's a lot of circus peanuts to go through. And,
are you saying
you know,
there's not a lot of demand for circus peanuts?
Not a huge demand. I did end up eating the lion's share, by which I mean like 95% of the last batch, I think, that I made.
Yeah. Wow. Spencer, you are unacquainted with the circus peanut. Would you have one now?
I would if these weren't like rock hard.
Yeah, I'll have one with you, just so you know they're not cranking you.
Yeah, they're still good.
All right, everyone, bite a circus peanut.
It's all the squeezing.
It's not going to break my teeth.
Oh, no. That's a circus peanut. You know what? It's good.
That tastes like a Necco wafer and a marshmallow had a baby.
Okay, yeah.
So this is our Thanksgiving spread here. Beer nuggets, circus peanut cake frosting, and these awesome pumpkin bars. In honor of Thanksgiving, we're going to listen back to some of our Under Rocks food-themed shows because we've got a lot of them.
We do eat a lot of them.
It turns out that we were interested in food, this crew, somehow.
Huh.
I can't wait to hear him back.
Yeah, let's do it.
I wanted to start with our fish fry show because there's really a great quote here at the beginning of this one that felt like it kind of set the tone and made sense today for Thanksgiving. So here's a quote from the beginning of our fish fry show. Take a listen to this.
Under Rocks has gotten delicious.
It certainly has gotten delicious. And I don't know about you guys, but I've been full for a couple weeks now because we have decided the most important thing we wanted to study this time, fish fries.
Fish fry.
Under Rocks has gotten delicious. So that was from our fish fry show. We went to a lot of different places for that. Also, we talked to an author and member of the Culinary Historians of Northern Illinois, Cynthia Clampett, talked to us a little bit about some of the backgrounds of fish fries.
I went to a conference once on Wisconsin supper clubs, and the statement was made that even if you had a Chinese restaurant, you better serve fish on Friday night if you're in Wisconsin, because it's just basically everybody in Wisconsin expects fish fry on Friday night. Roast beef on Saturday night and fish fry on Friday night. And so it basically from there spread, because what's wrong with that? You know, I mean, it's a great idea.
Why not?
Happens and to be so, delicious.
It is funny that, yeah, I had that same thought. Like, oh, I'm glad I said that then because I just thought that now.
That was a delicious, like, week. We spent just a week going to different places and eating fried fish.
Yeah.
And fried food. I didn't go to the VFW, but I heard tale that there was.
Oh, the VFW was incredible. There was a all-you-can-eat one we went to.
Ah, amazing. So, yeah, got to wait till Lent to get into that. But, hey, all of these shows will have links at WNIJ.org.
Oh,
so you can find all these shows again. Or you probably just remember all these shows because they were pretty memorable.
You should still listen and refresh your memory just to be
exactly.
sure. Verify is what you want to do.
Oh, and get some ideas for Thanksgiving because, it's coming right up.
Still got a couple hours.
Yeah.
Here's one more clip from our fish fry extravaganza. This is from Chris Rebone from Maple Park, recorded at the Maple Park American Legion.
My name is Chris Rebone. I'm the post commander for Maple Park American Legion, post 312. So we're the third Friday of every month, except for December. We take December off to kind of reset, take a breath. So it's always just nonstop. Beyond the fish fry, we do multiple events, pancake breakfast, supporting Maple Park Little League Baseball, Lions Club has events up here, things like that. So
there are a lot of ways organizations make money. It sounds like dishing up food is the winner here.
You look at it at a funeral. What makes you feel comforted after a funeral? And in some cases, it's a good warm meal and friends and family and community around you, and you have the support. And that's what we offer here. Half our building was built in 1926. The other half of the building was built in 1964. Yes, we have to maintain the building, but we're all servicemen and women, and our focus goes right back to the community. We sponsored a class of history students to go over to Normandy and visit D-Day, and we helped raise funds for them. Our main goal is that what we bring in has to go out. We cover costs and take care of the building when we can, but it has to go back to the community. That's all we want to do. Our house is your house. This is much your place as ours, whether you live in Maple Park or not. Just come here, enjoy. Shake a hand with someone you've never met before. You bump into them by happenstance, and you find out it's a guy you hadn't talked to in 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And this is the connection that's brought you back. That's the beauty of, like, this town. And that's every time we have this fish fry, that's what it represents to me. It's just the draw of just bringing folks together. Even if you never knew each other, somehow you're going to know each other before you leave. And I think that's great. That's what we need.
So now to segue that into beer nuggets.
Well, out that way is Dough Brothers, and they put in a solid entry of beer nuggets.
And so it's our next course on our Thanksgiving meal here. Staple.
Yeah.
Staple of DeKalb.
Possibly our most ambitious episode. We were in the live from Studio A.
Oh, yeah.
Although we were recorded. But that's where we were recording. And we had five or six different beer nuggets. And we had a panel of maybe 15 people.
Yeah.
Ages from. We had an expert and a child and all ranges in between.
Yep.
We had a band in recording this weekend. And the woman had not lived in DeKalb since 1998, and one of the first things she says is there still a place I can get beer nuggets around here?
That's great. It's got to be a college memory for a lot of people, and there's a shocking amount of folks who have gone to NIU.
It's definitely a nostalgia part, and we talk about that in our judging here. Let's hear it.
Like, tell me about, like, the first, do you remember the first time you had them? And some of you were kids when you had them, some of you were college students.
Yeah, probably not, though.
What do they mean to you guys?
Probably college age is definitely after the bars close and you order and you open the door and it's pizza guy and everyone's happy. But growing up, a lot of times it was the end of season, end of Little League season, you go to Pizzaville or you go to Pally Eyes and there's pizza and there's beer nuggets and all, everyone's enjoying that, so you kind of have that nostalgia mixed in with that.
I sort of agree. It reminds me of going either to, I think, Pally Eyes or Pizza Villa with my parents and then probably ordering an order because it's like, what are those? You know, and all right, we'll get it.
It is one of those things I'm surprised it really hasn't caught on elsewhere, you know? You think it'd be a no-brainer for a lot of restaurants, a lot of pizza places.
Yeah.
You know, especially around college towns.
That was from our judging in Studio A of the Beer Nuggets, along with Austin Cliff and also Brian. Your friend there.
Oh, my friend Brian Chennell definitely consumed a large amount of Beer Nuggets in his apartment back in, 2006 or so.
He's also a chef. That's why he was our expert. And he also gave us tips on reheating them.
Oh, that's
or
right.
Or not.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So check out the full episode for that.
Best enjoyed cold from the greasy bag the next morning.
If you would like to incorporate some Beer Nuggets into your own Thanksgiving, perhaps stuff it in the turkey.
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea. Beer Nuggets instead of the stuffing, instead of the bread, bread, a little celery.
Yeah,
I'd throw in some chili peppers. I think you'd really have something there.
Oh,
la la.
Okay. We got our next episode.
I like where this is going.
Yeah.
If you're curious a little bit about the history of the Beer Nuggets too, it's a little bit of a mystery, and there might be some controversy. But we talked with Joe Walsh, who was the owner of J.P. Hannigan's and the claimed inventor of the Beer Nuggets. Here's just a little bit from that talk with Joe Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh. I graduated from NIU and I opened a restaurant called J.P. Hannigan's Restaurant. I worked at the restaurant for probably 17, 18 years before I sold it. But Beer Nuggets were one of the things that came out of J.P. Hannigan's, and I was very proud of it. And we sold a ton of them.
Yeah, I'm sure. So tell us, when did you first start making Beer Nuggets?
Actually, that's a good question, because Beer Nuggets actually developed. And I can honestly say I did not come up with them. My employees did.
Okay.
We had pizzas and we had sandwiches and a fryer. So what happened was is the cooks would take pizza dough, roll it out, and cut it into squares and put it in the fryer. And they would eat it. They came up with the name Beer Nuggets, and that's just what the employees called it. And we didn't even have it on the menu, and some of my employees said, Joe, you ought to put this on the menu. They're really good. And all I could think of, well, who's going to buy fried dough dipped in pizza sauce? And they just convinced me, Joe. And then a lot of the employees loved it, and that was kind of started to become a staple among the employees. And so the next time we made the menu, I said, okay, we'll put Beer Nuggets on the menu. So we put Beer Nuggets on the menu, and they were a big hit. We sold a boatload of them.
Beer Nuggets.
Beer Nuggets.
Beer Nuggets.
Okay.
It's something that very few people outside of DeKalb even know about, but we are trying to change that today.
When did you first encounter Beer Nuggets? Because you are not an Illinois native.
I am not. And I lived in Rockford for quite some time and still didn't know about Beer Nuggets.
I don't think there's Beer Nuggets in Rockford.
No. But once I moved to DeKalb and started ordering pizza here, you see on the menu there's this thing called Beer Nuggets. And you think, do I need to be 21 to order a Beer Nugget? What is this about?
Yeah.
How about you?
When you told me the idea for this podcast, that was... Oh. I mean, I had heard of them, but I guess I always assumed that was an everywhere thing, because it just has that sound to it, Beer Nuggets.
It does.
It sounds like beer. I mean, beer nuts are a thing, right? And
Yeah,
so I had never tried them before, and this was quite an experience.
What did you think about your first Beer Nugget experience, Dan?
Well, at this point, man, I can't go back and remember that young man wearing a mask because he was afraid of catching COVID and putting that Beer Nugget through that mask and trying to masticate it all down. No, I mean, I'm eating them all the time now. So actually, I was surprised to hear that back. I was like, oh, yeah, I actually hadn't had them very often. But I eat them all the time now. And they're out by me where I live out there in the Ogle County, there's two pizza places. They both have Beer Nuggets on the menu.
It's spreading.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's great news.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And I think we can take credit for that.
I think so. I mean, we're grafting the Beer Nugget like the pawpaw tree. We're trying to kind of move it out. Johnny Pawpaw, Johnny Beer Nugget, moving it forward.
Yep.
So when you got a mouthful of Beer Nuggets and you need something to wash it down with, how about some mead?
Yes, oh, please. Yeah.
That was a good episode.
We stopped at it was Obscurity Mead Hall up in Elburn. That was a really fun time with Luke Goucher and Carson Sousa over there, the Obscurity Mead and Cider Hall. To start off, they told us a little bit of the history of mead. Here we go.
Yeah, we're at Obscurity Mead and Cider Hall in Elburn, Illinois.
Is there a cider master, like a brewmaster, or how does it, what's the nomenclature?
That's a great question. So I call myself a general custodian because between brewing beer and making mead and making cider, but if you go by the actual names, it would be a brewmaster in beer and then a mazer for mead and cider, right?
But even though there was some debate on that when we were just at the mead con, so I don't know. Nobody knows, maybe. I don't know.
There is a mead con.
And there's a cider con, actually, too. It's going to be happening in Chicago in 2 weeks.
Oh, where was mead con?
That was in Baltimore.
Nice. Okay.
Charm City.
So what is mazer? Like, can you spell that for us? What is
M-A-Z-E-R, I believe is how it's spelled, right?
Yeah.
What does it come from? What is the...
So mead is the oldest drink. I'm not sure where the mazer, I think the mazer comes from the cup, which is that the original cup?
Well, I think that's the argument. The mazer is a cup and not a person, and not a mead maker. And so there's where, you know, when the mead guys start talking, there's where I think some of that rub goes. But I think in most communication in regards to mead maker, it would be mead maker or mazer. I think that would be,
Yeah,
be able to use that way, either way.
So I think we have some basic questions to start.
Sure.
As
it's already complicated, right?
Right. as a borderline functioning alcoholic, I'm not sure what mead is either.
Okay.
So tell, what is mead?
Mead is water, honey, and yeast.
Okay.
So it's three pretty basic ingredients. It's basically what we call honey wine.
Honey wine.
Yep.
Okay. So you said it's the oldest drink. What did you mean by that?
So literally all the way dates back all the way to Mesopotamia when honey was leaking into pots and natural yeast spontaneously fermented, and it created this alcohol that was then consumed. Then it moved all the way through history. Past biblical, Vikings, honey has always been able, has been not only a consumed, culinary or food, it's also made for alcohol too as well, it also makes alcohol, shall I say. Sorry, it's not made for alcohol. I mean, here we go. We could ask.
It was made for alcohol. Maybe that's what those bees are here for, monks and many other things.
Yeah, they say the Mayflower stopped because they ran out of beer. I mean, that's the real fact there,
That was a fun time with them over at Obscurity Mead and Cider Hall. And part of that show, too, that people need to hear in the full episode is you actually made some mead, Austin, along with our old Friday Night Blues host, Harold Brown.
We did go through the steps of making mead, but I don't know if I would qualify as successful, perhaps technically successful.
It was an attempt?
Yes, there was an attempt made. Not technically successful, actually.
Was it good, though? What did it taste like?
There was a bit of a sock funk to it. I think you really got to work on getting those solids out of there.
Well, speaking of the funky taste, we mentioned that in our tasting here that we did at Obscurity Mead Hall. Funky is specifically the word used, a few times here.
So maybe it was a success.
So maybe it was supposed to be like that.
I got to look at the plain one. And see.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best.
Was that with the pawpaws?
The pawpaw, I think, delivered a slight sock funk. Sad to say, but I feel like there are complexities in brewing with it that exceed my skill set.
We should give pawpaws an honorable mention, too, because I didn't include them here in our clips because we could have a whole nother show about them, but we have a whole show about pawpaws, so you need to check that out also.
Yeah, best consumed fresh in season.
Yeah.
And the beer that I helped with did turn out well.
Yeah,
so
by professionals.
Yes, we got somebody that knew what they were doing.
And the episode best consumed on our feed. Doesn't have to be fresh. It's still good.
Exactly. Yes. It's fresh as the day as it was it dropped.
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a reason why it's called a feed. Enjoy.
Well, here's a little bit from our funky tasting that we did over there at Obscurity Mead Hall.
So mead doesn't usually have a good nose. Honey has a funky nose. I feel like you're getting raspberry on the nose here and cherry, a sweet dark cherry. And then you're also getting a little bit of honey. So it's not like beer where you're gonna get all this effervescence and we could discuss what that is. Sometimes mead in itself can be very funky on the nose, and then when you consume it, you're like, wow, that tastes nothing like what it smells like. So
kind of a rule of thumb is to not smell the mead, yeah. which is different than where you're at with wine or yeah. beer or some of those other things. So it's kind of a, everybody's natural, you know, is to put their nose up, and then, you know, that's where you start getting some of these people go, I don't like meat. It's like you had one and you put your nose up in it, you know. But this one actually does have a, you know, pretty decent hint of what's to come off of the nose. It's unique in that.
When you sip it, is it like wine?
This is a great question. That's a great question. So people are confused with what they get on their palate. When we do tastings, I'll watch people just take a little tiny sip. And I feel that's where it becomes subjective, but I feel like you don't really taste the liquid until you cover all the taste buds on your tongue. So if I have this much, I'm actually gonna drink this all in one sip. And why I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna put it all in my mouth. I'm gonna cover everything in my mouth because I just had some beer, right? Mm-hmm. Or I just ate some peanuts, or I just had a sandwich, Altoid. Right? Yeah, well, then you're just totally smoked. You're not gonna get anything. Right. But yeah, you wanna put it in your mouth. You wanna consume everything that's in this, like in this about, I say an ounce personally. When we do beer samplings, I literally will like, if it's this much, it'll probably all go in my mouth because I want to coat everything and like get every little flavor that I can. So that would be my suggestion to you with this about, you know, this is about an ounce. This is a 5 ounce glass and this might not even be a full ounce. So maybe 3/4, 90% of an ounce. So okay. I would bottoms say up. Bottoms up.
Okay. This next one. Not Thanksgiving related at all, but if you're having breakfast for Thanksgiving, we did a whole show about making syrup with your friend Aaron Seitz.
I remember that one. That was a fun episode, yeah.
I remember that one because I was working here at the station crying tears. It was like, I want to make maple syrup with you guys.
That was like the last good season, too. We've been trying to do it every, you know, it's earlier and earlier.
Like, yeah.
You do it once the frosts, it's below the frost, it's below freezing in the morning, and then it gets up above freezing at night, and then below, so there's that period of time, and last year that started in January, and it was just crazy, and you almost couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah, that ain't right.
No.
But you know what is right, is this episode.
Syrup,
so good.
Here's a little bit of our expert, Aaron Seitz, telling us about how to make the perfect syrup.
Tell us a little bit about what we're seeing here. In the process that's going on.
Yeah, so we tapped trees about 2 weeks ago, just drilling small holes into maple trees. Doesn't hurt them one bit, and then the sap drips out, we collect it in buckets, and now we're at the point where we're trying to boil 24 gallons of sap down into what will be 5 pints.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so it's a lot of sap needed for a little syrup.
Right, so the key here is surface area. So if you were to do this at home, you'd be boiling, you know, sap in a pot. But what we've got here is this really shallow pan. It's only 4 inches tall, but it's about 40 inches long. And so this long, shallow pan, the surface area is just evaporating it. And the faster we can evaporate it, you know, the quicker it turns into syrup.
So what are the conditions, the best conditions for sapping the tree? When do you know it's time to get the sap?
Yeah, you're looking for a string of temperatures where the high is above freezing and the low is below freezing. And so extending that out, we had, you know, about 6 or 7 days in a row where the highs were in the high 40s, low 50s, and that was causing the sap to just run up the tree. And then at nights, it was 30 degrees, 20, 29 degrees, and that was perfect because that would slow that. So what's happening is on the south side of the tree, when you tap that, and in the morning when the sun comes up and heats up that tree, all of the sap is just flowing up from the ground into the, you know, into the buds, swelling those small branches and you just take a tiny little bit of it, and it's just dribbling out drip by drip, and over the week it collects into buckets, and that's where we're at.
So what else in the process, what happens next in the process? How does it become sweet? Do you start adding sugar and things once it starts to thicken? How does that work?
You would think so. So if you were to taste this right now, it would taste basically like water. Maybe Dan could even dial some up. But know that the sweetness is already in the sap. So maple trees contain a trace amounts of sugar where, you know, almost imperceptible from sap. But when you boil that down and you evaporate all the water, what you're left with is the condensed sugars. And the more you evaporate, the more it comes down into a higher sugar content. And eventually you can get it down to syrup. And then even from that, you can get it down even more and reduce more water and get it down to hard candy. So what you're left with when you evaporate all this is the sweetness of the maple tree itself. No sugar.
While we were up there in your neck of the woods making syrup, Dan, we stopped by again, different time of year, I think, to hunt for another delicacy, morels.
Oh,
morel mushrooms.
Yeah.
A lot of people, obviously, in this area like to hunt for morels in the spring, and they're very popular. We didn't quite have the best luck on our trip, did we?
No, and I haven't since either.
No, and I've looked again and have not. I think like that. I think my area has dried up. But we were lucky in finding fun.
Exactly, so much fun.
Which is all I care about.
Baskets of fun.
Spencer was the one like, no mushrooms. This sucks.
We're like, didn't you have fun?
Yeah. No.
We were really optimistic about it, though, when we started.
Yeah, one of us said it was a guarantee for sure that we'd find it, and that one is not even here at the moment.
Oh, would that be Chris Fink?
Chris Fink.
Here are the two tools that you need to hunt for mushrooms. Binoculars, you'll see what these are for, and a bag. And we know what that's for, to fill up with mushrooms.
Binoculars, interesting. Are we looking for very far away mushrooms?
Chris says we need to get hefty bags.
To get all the mushrooms. I made that joke before, but you weren't recording.
I heard that we need to take a leaf blower. That's how the modern folks are doing this.
That's terrible.
Is that true?
Isn't that horrible? I've seen people complain about people taking leaf blowers out into the woods to look for morels.
That's dumb.
Yeah, it's stupid.
It's infuriating. Horrible. Hey, listener, don't do that.
No.
At home.
We'll find morels. We won't be shut out. That's my prediction.
Not shut out? Okay.
Okay.
Spoiler. We were shut out.
Well, you guys didn't bring a leaf blower.
Yeah. Wouldn't have hurt. But, you know, we saw some cool birds, too.
Yeah.
And we saw some... it was raining on us a little bit. It was a fun day. I had a good time.
My boots are still muddy. I haven't cleaned them until that episode.
Really?
Yeah.
Not until I find a morel will I clean these boots.
Exactly.
Yes, it's about luck. That's why they're still dirty. Yes. Wink, wink.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Skill. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We also took home some golden oysters.
Oysters, yeah. Mm. And wasn't there hen of the woods?
Chicken of the forest.
Hen of the woods. Chicken of the hen of the forest.
Chicken of the woods or hen of the woods.
There you go.
Yeah, we found a good
or
amount of that,
mushroom.
If I remember.
And this would have been in the spring you were hunting morels, right?
Yeah.
So it would have been chicken of the woods, I do believe. Hen of the woods is in the fall.
Ooh, la,
they're different.
It's true.
Yes.
Yes.
And when do those delicious fingers of death come up? When
oh, the dead man's fingers?
Dead man's fingers.
That's a good question. I don't know when. Yeah, I don't know when
yeah,
those,
I think
are
those are.
Really want an omelet with those.
No, not good for eating.
Really, with a
usually
name like
the
that.
One. Yeah, usually the ones with the spooky names aren't the greatest for eating.
Okay.
Death cap.
Noted. Mm.
Yeah. If
angel wings.
Do not fry those up for Thanksgiving, anyone. Do not. But if you have some morels, you're going to have to rehydrate them.
Yeah, I would not use those morels either at this point.
Yeah. But yeah.
Well, here's a little bit more from our hunt with Chris Fink on the morel hunt with us.
We've officially gone off-road.
This is where you've...
This is our entrance to the woods.
This is where you have found stuff in the past.
Tell us why you look by dead trees for the mushrooms.
Well, it's not just any trees. Some trees are more productive than others. Elm trees are the most productive for mushrooms, followed by maybe apple trees and, you know, some pine trees. You can find morels by them. So that's some mystery of growing morels. They like the bark of dead elm trees.
But only the first year, you said, after the tree dies, usually.
Right, right. That's a secret of mushroom hunting that I'm letting out there, that only the first year after the tree has died is the tree the most productive for growing mushrooms.
Now, the sad thing would be elms are on decline. Does this mean morels are going to be in decline?
Well, you wonder, but there don't seem to be a shortage of dead elm trees. You know, they grow up to a certain age and then they die. So there's lots of young elm trees everywhere you look. So they just don't, unfortunately, live into their dotage like they used to. So
it's actually good for morels.
Guess so. In our lifetime.
Yeah. Who cares? And this is the season. What are the weather conditions we're looking for? Like, why is Mother's Day seems to be morels' day?
Well, May is the mushroom's favorite month.
Because of the alliteration?
It's actually my favorite month, too. Maybe that's why I like mushrooms. Well, there's a wren. So they like, supposedly, they like weather between 60 and 70 degrees, and they like soil temperature about 55 degrees or so.
Oh, I do, too.
Yeah, me, too.
Maybe I guess May is my favorite month.
Sue said on the drive over here that she has a friend who was practicing looking at pictures of forest with a mushroom hidden in it so that she could, you know, get her eye ready.
Now describe, like, okay, so what are people looking for coming up out of the soil? It is radio.
Well, they call these, you know, people say, oh, it looks like a brain on a stem. You can't really mistake a morel for some other kind of mushrooms. So that's one of the reasons they're great to hunt for, because you can't really make a mistake.
What about those fake morels, though?
There are false morels. But you don't usually see those in the spring. At least I don't. You see them more in the fall.
Okay.
And they don't look that similar.
Okay.
My favorite false morel I ever found turned out to be a walnut cap balanced perfectly on a stick that was jammed in, sticking up out of the ground.
Yeah, if you look long enough, everything starts to look like a mushroom.
Uh-huh.
Oh, hey, Chris, is there a connection between May apples and finding morels? I was told that, like, if you look for May apples like those, that's a good place to look.
No, that mostly coincides with the season. So May apples also like May, just like morels do.
So it's just an indication that you're looking at the right time, not the right place.
Exactly.
Okay.
You were saying there's a debate between the colors?
A big debate among mushroom hunters about, are there different kinds of mushrooms? And you can find scientific articles that say, oh, there are three different kinds of morels. And you'll also find articles that say, oh, it's hogwash, there's just one kind of morel. But often when they first come up, they're a different color than when they get older. And so people say, oh, I found some browns. You know, I think those are brown morels. But later on, those brown morels often turn yellow. And so people say, oh, I found yellows. And I fall on the side of just one species.
Okay.
Just because I've watched them grow up from brown to yellow.
So you then what you're saying...
Or they'll say gray. I found grays. I found some little grays.
You've actually seen them change colors as they grow.
Yes, there's another debate among mushrooms. Some people think that they just sprout from the ground the size that they're going to be, and they don't really grow.
Like from the head of Zeus.
But they do grow.
So, but what that suggests is that you have found mushrooms and then let them be.
Yes, that's the mushroom hunter's ethics, whether or not to pick a small mushroom. And a lot of folks will pick any mushroom they find, but I just can't bring myself.
So you leave the small ones and then you come back and check on them?
If I can, or I just leave them for some other hunter to find.
Whoa! I think let's venture in. That's where you found them in the past.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention too. It's funny that you mentioned the rain, Dan, because this was a clip here at the end of our morel episode.
Now, sure, we didn't get any morels, Spencer, but don't feel too bad about it.
Dry your eyes.
Dry your eyes, Spencer. No, I mean it. Stop crying.
That's the rain.
Oh, if you think we failed, then you're not on my mushroom team. I'm having a fun time, and that's always a victory for me. Now, sure, no morels, but you just got to readjust your idea of what a success is. And to me, success is not finding anything except a good time with good friends. Listeners, we want your ideas about things we won't be able to achieve.
Drag it up.
Now that's a great way. That's a great thing to be thankful there for.
Yeah, I was thinking, I am thankful for
Dan Libman's positivity.
Always looking on the bright side.
That's perambulatory positivity. You can hear. I'm more interested in walking.
Makes it real.
Yeah.
Well, Spencer was crying. You had to get him home.
He looks a little sad right now.
Well, yeah. That's because I ate all this food and I'm ready for my Thanksgiving nap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This was fun listening back and reminiscing on some of these food specials. We also talked with some culinary historians. You can check those out online, too. Brad Wiles at the Founders Memorial Library here. We drank some whiskey. We've done a lot of
sauerkraut cake.
Sauerkraut cake.
Yeah. We'll have the recipe for kraut cake, especially in these difficult times where things aren't cheap. You can make your own kraut, you can make some cake, and it'll be cheap.
And it was good.
Surprisingly good. And so we'll throw some more cheap old recipes up on our website with this podcast.
I see you guys are saving some circus peanut salad for later.
Yeah, I'm going to
ask your plates.
Get some of mine in a to-go box.
You need some saran wrap.
Are you okay, Dan? You've barely touched your circus peanut salad.
I just took a lot more than I was.
So Austin is debating whether to take circus peanut salad to my family Thanksgiving.
Well, how much does he like them? Do you get along with the Stevenses?
They're okay.
They're out of state, so I guess it doesn't matter.
I'd bring it.
Yeah.
I mean, as opposed to what?
Well, there is the Thanksgiving Jell-O salad that might be a little bit more appropriate.
Tell us more.
Yeah, what's
well, on? My family has been making this for decades, we'll say, because it probably dates to the 60s just based off the Jell-O. But it's you use a red Jell-O, of course, and then you have... let's see.
My favorite flavor.
Celery. Yes, red flavor.
Oh, my God.
And then you have celery. Yeah, it starts great. Granny Smith apples, walnuts.
Oh, no.
Cranberries, horseradish. And then you have a whipped topping of Cool Whip, horseradish, and mayonnaise.
What does it taste like?
Thanksgiving.
What's the flavor profile?
In the chalice. No, it's basically like your... cranberry sauce, but zhuzhed up a bit.
It's kind of got a Susan Steinberg feel to it.
Wasn't that her recipe?
It could be.
The horseradish?
No, this one is much more defined as Jell-O with some whipped cream. Okay.
Yeah, it's not folded in like the circus peanut salad to a fluff, but rather it's a slab of Jell-O with a nice whipped topping with some zing.
You know,
it's zingy.
It is zingy. It's
you home cooks with your technical expertise, and I can barely follow it.
You know, okay. So that makes me think of the roots of that sort of a recipe. I bet everyone has one of those.
Yeah,
Jell-O salads in their ancient
some family member
box.
Makes sure. every year
with
yeah.
some aunt's name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Served in a ring.
Oh yeah. I have my friend Lisa Fielding, every year, never fails. Her mom makes aspic for Thanksgiving. So there's always this clear gelatin. Let's have her tell us about that.
Lisa Fielding, welcome to Under Rocks.
Thank you. So excited
to have you here because we have our... Thanksgiving connections over time.
Oh, yes.
You were
yes.
the person who introduced me to the phrase Friendsgiving. Do you remember?
And Orphans Thanksgiving.
Orphans just Thanksgiving orphans. Was way better than Friendsgiving.
It was
orphans, oh my gosh.
Because we worked in TV and radio and we were always working on holidays. And I think one year I decided to have everybody over who had to work and couldn't go be with their families. And first and last time that I ever made a Thanksgiving meal. I know. I haven't done it since.
Oh my gosh. I was so lucky to be there then.
I swear to God, I was just talking to my family about this the other day. And I said, God, I wish I could host Thanksgiving because I have a smaller condo. And I said, the only time I ever made it was Orphan's Thanksgiving like 30 years ago. Everyone was like, you never made Thanksgiving. I go, I did. I swear to God. Let's call Sue Stevens right now.
Oh, Rockford in our 20s.
Yes.
Yep. Good times.
What a time, for sure.
One of the traditions in your family is a Friday Thanksgiving. thanks Correct. To your schedule. Is that still
Yes.
happening?
Yes, it is.
Whoa.
You have a wonderful memory because, again, that came up again because we were talking about holidays and who were off. And I said, you know, we don't celebrate on Thursday. We celebrate on Friday. And everyone says, why? I said, because I work the holidays and I continue to work the holidays. Once my sister and my brother, who were younger, started getting married, it was kind of like, oh, well, who's going to go to what house? And my mom decided, well, let's have it on Friday so the married people can go to the in-laws and we can all be together on Friday and Lisa can work the holiday and have Friday off. So yes, nice. Very good, Susan.
Okay. More points for me.
Yes. Okay. Two. You're two for two.
2 points.
Yes.
All right. Well, this one's for all the points.
Okay.
Lisa, there is something on your Thanksgiving table every year. Yes, thanks to your mom, your family tradition.
Yes. So I laugh about it a lot because as a kid, I think when you think about food that kind of scared you as a kid or food that you like thought was gross, I'll name a few and then I'll tell you about what you just asked me.
Okay.
The first one was, what's it called? An olive loaf?
Oh,
they're so gross. Mm. Okay. And it does have something to do with what I'm going to tell you about. So I remember, the olive loaf looks so gross. Not that we ever bought it, but I remember seeing it in the deli and I thought, ew, why does bologna have all these things in it? Gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I hated olive loaves, even though I never tried it. But I also hated peas and liver. Okay, those are my three. Now, the fourth one is something my mom has made my entire life because her mom made it, and then her mom made it. It's called aspic, A-S-P-I-C. But I lovingly and jokingly call it aspic. Because it has all these like really weird things in it and it jiggles. Okay. And but aspic is jello. It's a jello mold.
Okay. Okay.
And it has actually a very interesting history. It goes back to the 18th century in Europe and it's usually a gelatin mold. And traditionally it holds meats, which is actually grosser in my mind.
Ew.
Yes. If you look it up, it'll say traditional jello mold with meat in it.
Oh,
it's a European dish. Okay. Now my mom makes it and she calls it tomato aspic. Okay. Which is a little more savory to people rather than meat. In the whole perspective of things, I guess this isn't as bad as it could be, but I've ran with it for my 50 plus years with, you know, kind of like I hate it because I'm still a little kid at heart and that I'll never touch it. And I make fun of it all the time. And so it's kind of been our shtick over the years. And half my family eats it, half of us don't. Okay, so we all kind of like laugh about who hates it and who doesn't. So only half the table has little squares of it. So it's made of tomato sauce. Or no, not tomato sauce. Tomato juice. Okay.
Oh.
And clear gelatin. Okay. But she cuts up onions and peppers and celery. And that's what again, that's a little kid in me. I don't like celery and onions and peppers and things. That's just me. Okay.
Okay,
I should have grown out of that probably when I was like 18, but I just haven't. So the fact that she puts that in there, obviously it reminds me of onion loaf or whatever, olive loaf. And I can't eat it.
Yeah.
I'm sure I wouldn't die if I had a bite, but I refuse to.
You still haven't done it?
No.
You
I can't.
I have never I had a, oh my gosh. Okay.
Never. Okay. So she makes a Thanksgiving and she makes a Christmas and we always make a big joke about how she does it. And my mom's become a little bit of the Facebook star on Thanksgiving because I always have her tell everybody about the aspic and people look forward to that report every year.
Yes.
And last year I put like Benny Hill music behind it and it was just kind of funny. So I just have fun with it. And she kind of gets annoyed now, but she knows that it's all in fun. You know, like I said, half my family lives it. And half of us kind of hate it out of just fun, I think. But I'm going to take a bite this year for you.
Would you?
I'll videotape it.
Oh, my gosh. Are you sure you want to do that, though? It's kind of hard to give up.
I think it is a streak of being, obstinate about never eating. But I guess it keeps me young because I still think I'm 12 and hate aspect.
What about you? I mean, have you had it?
I've not had like a savory aspic, and I'm curious. Well, feel free to send them in, folks. But
Lisa, put some in your napkin and bring it home. I'll come back and pick it up and feed it to Austin.
But I'll try divisive gross foods up to about 5 times because I've found that like you got to give them a few chances because sometimes it's just the preparation. And some are actually, like, good
uh-huh.
a couple of those times. Like, kimchi is on that list for me.
Kimchi's great.
I've had some bad ones, and I've had some okay. that I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, but I, it's the odor.
How about durian? Have you ever had any durian?
I don't think so.
I did once.
Yeah? Oh, I had a durian, it was like a mixed, it wasn't exactly a shake, but it was like served with crushed ice and like masked probably
oh, really?
With like milk or something like huh. that to
so
kind of.
Just don't smell it.
It still had that kind of sock funk that we all know and love, but, you know, I think it kind of killed the aroma by icing it and coating
yeah,
it in
I
milk,
would bet
you
so.
Know.
Yeah.
So I don't think I got the full treatment.
Durian light.
Yeah. So what's the thing that is going to show up on your Thanksgiving tables that you're just, you don't want? You're not going to eat that.
I'm not going to eat. Oh, you know what? I don't know if my aunt's a list. My aunt makes a sweet potato, but with marshmallows in it, which I guess is maybe traditional.
For some.
But it's...
like browned on the top.
It's just got little marshmallows. I don't know. I won't eat it.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's good, but...
Yeah, for some.
Some people like it, but I'm not too into the green bean casserole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's usually the reject on my plate.
With the Jell-O salad, it got to a point where I didn't like it, but then I had to make it because I found it weird and strange and just wanted to wrap my head around it. And I think I finally figured out that I didn't like that things weren't small diced. So you gotta get all the little bits more incorporated.
Because
there's like, you don't want
a
half walnut in there,
yeah.
but a piece.
Yeah.
Okay. And I will say, I have had this. I've had this with Austin and his family. And as Austin would say, it's not terrible.
Well, not you can make terrible. Anything with love.
You can.
And sometimes it's still mediocre. But
yes. Yep. Yeah.
What's yours, Sue?
What's mine? It's that relish tray with the olives. I just not interested in that. But pretty much everything else I'm game for.
Okay.
Favorite thing of all time though is, and it came from my mom's stuffing. Just regular old sage stuffing. Now if someone wanted to put oysters in that, I would give that a big no.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I'm just saying this is just plain ordinary the stuffing. And so I found her secret recipe card.
Uh-huh.
I was really excited to find that because now it's like I can make it like she did. And the name on it was TV stuffing. So it was not handed down through the generations.
I wonder
she saw
who
it
TV
on TV.
Was. I love that.
I think she saw it
sounds
on
like a Yugoslavian
TV.
Name.
Oh, I didn't think of it that way. I think she just saw it on TV in the 60s and copied it down.
You can't beat it.
No.
Yeah, I agree with you. Stuffing's the winner, but I like to mess with it too. I like to add.
Yeah, what do you throw in?
I throw green chilies in there. Hatch green chilies.
Okay.
And mushrooms.
Okay.
And
raisins.
No.
Yeah, that's
absolutely not.
Not cool.
Dan's facial expression completely changed to incredulous at the mention of raisins.
I was appalled at the thought.
Just sorry.
Even shocked.
Yeah.
Well, folks, let us know what some of your traditions are for Thanksgiving, your favorite things, your least favorite things, your strange recipes. And,
your aspics.
Send them in, folks.
And tell us what weird food we should try next on the show. Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye.
Send us your aspics.
Send us your aspics.